I need a vote to recess the executive session.
So moved.
I have a motion and second to recess, and then we'll conduct the study session, and then we'll reconvene the executive session. So all in favor of the recess of the executive session, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Let's then go to the study session agenda item. The first item is to review items that will be on the May 5th regular council meeting. Let's go to that packet. Anything on page one, page two, Tom?
Jenny, are you still here? I don't have any questions about items three through C, but I have an apology to make. The Cornish Pasty Company is in, tucked into a little place right next to where Raphael's used to be, and I was wrong, and I didn't mean to. I told you at the time it didn't make any difference because I knew what the council was going to do, but I wanted to apologize publicly for giving you misleading information.
Okay. All right, that's page two. Page three, contracts. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I have a question on 5B. Do we have anybody from Fleet here?
I assume 5A I have a conflict on. All right.
Okay, my question on 5B is the dollar increase for the supply for gasoline and diesel fuel. And you may not have the answer. I had Kathy call yesterday to let you know that I was going to be asking the question, which is if we do an analysis of vehicles that are being replaced in the fleet that could be replaced by an alternative fuel vehicle, how long does it take to do a payback if that happens over the lifespan of the vehicle, given the current price of gasoline and given the fact that we're probably looking at gas going up over $4 a gallon? Have you had a chance to look at that?
I had a chance to look at it this morning, and taking a look at the vehicles that we have in the fleet right now, and I think your question was really aimed towards hybrid vehicles.
Correct.
As opposed to flex fuel vehicles. If we're looking at the miles per gallon, you know, originally these vehicles were advertised to be 40 mile per gallon vehicles. Today we're seeing those at about 28 miles per gallon. So we're not seeing what was originally advertised.
Okay.
And of course that has a lot to do with how the vehicle is used and where the vehicle is used. If you're looking at the conventional vehicles, we're looking at about 14 miles per gallon. So there is certainly an increase there in fuel economy. The other problem that we have when we're looking at these types of vehicles is the range of vehicles that we have as opposed to hybrid options that are out there. Currently we have three Toyota Priuses that are in the administrative pool fleet, which works very well there, but as we start moving this technology out towards the vocational vehicles, pickup trucks, and out to utility body vehicles, we have fewer and fewer options. So we're not going to be able to, you know, take this technology and start converting all of these light-duty vehicles. There's about 1,000 units in the fleet right now that are light-duty out of the 1,829 that are in the fleet right now. So there is a cost savings. When I took a look at it, it was about $120,000 in savings if you could move this fleet completely across to the hybrid side. One thing to consider also, Vice Mayor, is that the vehicles that we're buying today are flex fuel vehicles. So these vehicles are able to operate on the E85 ethanol, which is a product that is just being introduced to the Valley now, and it is a product that is cheaper than gasoline. So we will be able to take advantage of that. We're not going to put it in the city infrastructure, fuel infrastructure right now, but we could card lock these. We're going to have access to that. The other great technology that has changed is the computer systems on the latest vehicles do allow the 8-cylinder engines to operate at 6 and 4 cylinders depending upon the loads placed against the engine. So we've come a long way in the latest group of designs in the past 2 years. So all of that technology is entering the fleet right now. So if you were to take a look at the conventionally powered vehicles and what we were looking at as fuel consumption, say, 5 years ago, and looking at that today, we're seeing a much better fuel economy. And of course, we're also expanding scope between that time period also.
Well, what I'm asking is that on a going forward basis, that you keep doing this analysis as, and I'm not suggesting we should turn around and replace the fleet today. I'm saying as vehicles come up for replacement,
right.
You know, should we buy more of those Priuses or the Honda that's the same sort of thing? And I think that some of the others are coming along and having vehicles that are in there. What is that, you know, when you do that analysis, what is that break even and then make money point? And, you know, how does that work now with the trucks that are coming along? We've seen some of those. I think we saw a bus that operated on that. And can we start getting our fuel from McDonald's when they're done with the French fry oil?
Well, get one actually, of those. That's biodiesel. And we are using biodiesel in the fleet. Every diesel vehicle that you see powered by that is owned by the city of Mesa is using biodiesel. It uses a 5% mixture, B5. And you're absolutely correct. Some of that is deep fryer grease that has been reformulated to be used at that product.
And then the question becomes, you know, when we have to replace a diesel, do we have to replace it with another diesel, or do we have an option to not? Because right now the cost of diesel is higher than the cost of regular gasoline.
That is correct, Vice Mayor. What we do when we have a vehicle that comes up for a replacement is we meet with the client, our internal client. We discuss the life of that vehicle. You know, we're going to own that vehicle maybe 7, all the way out to maybe 12 years. And we talk about the scope of work that vehicle is going to have to do during that period of time. And then that also allows us to begin to put together a design that will actually move the load, do what needs to be done. And in some cases, we can fulfill that with a hybrid vehicle. To give you an idea, the cost difference and the capital cost difference between a hybrid and a conventionally powered vehicle for a light-duty vehicle is about $3,000 additional capital cost.
So that's when you have to do that analysis.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks, Pete. Really appreciate it.
Okay. I just did it on a scratch pad, so I'll share my notes with you guys later and see how close we got.
What'd you come up with?
Well, if you 14 versus 28 miles per gallon, if you went 28,000 miles in a year, which is high, you'd have 1,000 gallons versus 2,000 for the other one. So you got a 1,000-gallon difference at $4 is $4,000 a year on 28,000 miles. So just crank it down to your right mileage, and you're fairly close.
Correct.
Okay. Tom?
One point on this, on the Prius, I don't know whether the 28 is an average, but if you're Priuses are only getting 28 miles a gallon, you need to do something with them, because my wife's had one for 6 years and she gets 49 to 52.
Right.
She drives in city and on the freeway. So
a lot of it has to do with how you drive the vehicle.
Right.
If you can keep that vehicle at a very low speed and low RPM, you're on the electric side. Once you're on to the main power plant, which is the gas engine, it is still a very small gas engine, but it is still using fuel. So it's no different than having a four-cylinder conventionally powered vehicle that you're driving.
Okay, that's page 3. Any other questions? Let's go over to page 4, continuing contracts. Page 5. Tom.
I don't need it now, but on 5I, the floor at the theater, there, I understand the rationale, but it would have been nice to have had the other options that were available to us and their cost in the council packet, as opposed to just basically the conclusion that this is the way that we need to go. You know, and by Monday, I'd just like to have that comparative information.
Sure.
Because I don't even know how much the replacing it with the current floor was going to cost, because if it was $2,000 and we get 3 years out of it, that's cheaper than this. So I don't have any way of comparison. I mean, I understand the rationale, but I'd like to have
we have the information if you want to know. We can speak to that.
Why don't you supply it to us? If you want to do it now, that's fine.
Why don't you supply the information to the council on the backup options and the costs?
Okay.
And if we have some further questions, we'll ask you before a Monday meeting.
All right.
All right. Okay. That's page 5. Page 6.
Starting with Joe.
Are my conflicts put in order again? This is what we have. 5J, K, L, M, N. What do I have a conflict on the court building? Oh, there's a parking lot or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'll declare those five conflicts. And
I have a conflict on 5M because we designed that line.
All right.
We have, I'm sorry, did you say M or N?
M.
M. Thank you, Darrell.
All right. Do you have a question on page 5 or 6? All right. Page 7, introduction. Tom.
I would like 6C taken off the consent agenda. I can't even vote for that at introduction. There's too much history involved.
Okay.
All right. That's payday loan stores.
Mayor, related to that item, I wanted to point out that we provided some additional backup material for that at your place this morning, showing locations of current facilities.
Okay.
Mayor, Council, I just want to be clear. We are prepared to do a real brief presentation, if you like, on the court building. Does this council want to kind of see some elevations, or because you're making a fairly large commitment here on 5N?
Why don't we, well, Vice Mayor, would you like to conduct
what's your preference?
My preference, well, it depends on what the agenda looks like for Monday night. My concern is how much agenda we have here and how long we've been keeping people waiting. So I would like to hear the presentation, but can we do it Monday?
Okay, we can build it on Monday. Good. Okay.
Is that all right?
Move feel like pretty significant.
Yeah. Instead of time.
Yeah, we can add some time on Monday.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. That's, I can't say. All right. It's page 7, page 8. Page 9, zoning cases, continued on page 10, 11, Scott.
6-0, I'm going to leave it on consent for the introduction, but I want it removed for the 6-0, and on page 11, Z-08. 2-8 for the council use permit. So leave it on consent for the introduction and remove it for the final.
Just giving a warning shot.
Just
that,
a warning shot.
All right. Okay. So noted.
And Mayor, I'd point out 6N is the eastern part of the Riverview project, the loft development there, in case there's any conflicts.
I'll have to consider continuing on conflict on that one.
I'll have to work for it.
All right, so remove 6N, and Tom and I will declare conflicts. Resolutions on page 11. Continuing on page 12. If you have enough time, something on 7E would be nice to get an explanation of what they're doing there. Yeah, I thought so too. Because we've done some gas power plants, small ones, and I think going into solar would be interesting to see what the deal is.
Sure.
All right. We're good. All right. How about 7H? I think that was it. Wasn't that a split vote coming forward?
Yeah.
You want to remove that one?
This is the actual vote on it?
Yeah. Can we take it off consent?
7H. Which one?
7H.
Off
right,
consent.
Right.
All right. Page 13. I want to remove 7J from consent. I'm not overly excited about a $50,000 request for Cubs baseball at the Mesa Historical Museum. This whole the application process is something I'm not overly excited about to begin with, that 12% gaming money and who gets to apply and who doesn't and whether we have to endorse it or not endorse it. But
good morning, Mayor.
I'm not sure
Jerry Dillahay is here, but as you know, you and I have had many conversations about the process that the Indian communities undertake as far as requesting folks to apply for grants. And on item J, those are outside organizations, of course, that need a resolution of support from the city before those can be submitted to the reservation for their consideration. And there's probably no easy answer. Each of the tribes does it differently. Some request certain individuals or organizations apply. Others open it for blanket applications, and but they all do require a resolution of support from the city.
So they need to be signed by the mayor or vice mayor?
By the majority of the council.
All right.
But signed.
Signed somehow, all right. Scott? So it just gets passed forward that the council sent it forward. It doesn't say in on a split vote of 4-3, we think it's a good project?
Correct. Just that it's been approved by a majority of the council.
All right. Scott?
Can we remove 8B, please?
8B? All right. Anything else on page 13? Page 14? We have 8C for you there, Scott, on reimbursement for mayor and council members on car allowances.
That's E.
Yeah.
Oh, that's 8E. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks for saving that for me.
Yeah, all right. Anything else? That's on page 14. Any others on 14?
Should be.
All right. Page 15? Okay, let's go back to study session agenda item number 2. And that would be hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the 07-08 and 08-09 budget, including but not limited to, and then we have four different subtopics underneath that one. So let's go ahead and work through them. Do we have any council members elect that are, if you want to come on up and join us, Dave? Mm-hmm. No, all right, stay here. Mike's gone. Are you going to go through them in the order we have them listed there? All right, the first one then is forecast update and state revenue estimates and legislative impacts. So.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We wanted to come back to you. We gave you a pretty comprehensive update on 07-08 and 08-09 revenues that would support the budget expenditures for each of those 2 years on March 20th. Good news is that we've not really downgraded any of our revenue projections from that time. So all the items that we've been discussing from that, where we came up with the $20.8 million in cuts needed for 08-09 in ongoing, that's really where we still are. So we have not deteriorated from a revenue standpoint. We do have some possible pressures. We go to slide number 2, just get right into it. Here's about where we were on those revenue projections. Probably the two biggest pressures, and I just want to point out, is we're still looking at local sales tax. I did not put the slides in like it did. They're attached for state sales or sorry, local sales tax, slide 20. You're looking at about where we were for this first fiscal year, about negative 3.6 on actual revenue collections over 06-07. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a negative 2% for 08-09. That's exactly where we were when we came forward. We do still see some downward pressure on it. We're still watching that one. That one, from a revenue standpoint, is the one we'll watch the most closely going into 08-09 and have to react to. State shared, which is then our next largest revenue source in the general fund and our overall operating, we have made the assumption that the state is going to live up to all the commitments that they've made to this point. As you all know, they've just balanced their 07-08 budget, which did not raid any of these funds. But going forward for 08-09, this would probably be one of the most significant areas for us to watch. How that is significant, that would be a dollar-for-dollar decrease. We would have to address it on that basis once we learn about what those cuts are. We have budgeted from a standpoint that they're going to live up to the commitments that we've been provided with. So we're about where we were on those issues for 07-08 and 08-09. We do have a couple legislative issues that could cause us some downward pressure for next year. We do know that House Bill 2732, which is changing how we collect taxes or assess taxes on local sales taxes on RVs and autos on out-of-state deliveries, they're changing some of that. That could have an impact of $800,000 to $1.2 million. We'll get some further estimates on that from tax and licensing. And they're here to answer any questions on that if you have it. But there is some downward. They're changing the. I'll have Roger. He's got the proper definitions of what they're actually doing. Roger and Brent.
Mayor, Council, the House bill that that Chuck made reference to is a non-resident tax bill that has to deal with non-residents coming in and purchasing RVs and automobiles and being exempt from sales tax and vehicle licensing tax. Back in 2004, the legislature created an incentive for non-residents to come into the state to purchase these vehicles, and they exempted them from the sales tax, exempted them from from the vehicle licensing tax. There were some things that a purchaser need to show to prove that they were a non-resident. They had to provide a license from another state, a address from another state on that license. In addition to that, they had to purchase a 90-day temporary license plate permit that allowed them to drive it, and the vehicle had to be delivered out of the state. And if someone met those requirements, then they were considered a non-resident and were exempt from this tax. Now, and Roger can talk to some of the details of this, but when we go back and we audit some of these exemptions from the auto dealers or the RV dealers, oftentimes we find circumstances where people have taken the vehicle out of state and brought it back directly into the state. They actually have the vehicle or the RV insured here in the state. They own property. And so in those circumstances, we've felt that they haven't met the non-resident requirements, and we've gone back through an audit and gotten money back from the dealers through this audit process, and that would be the amount of money that Chuck is making reference to. This House bill would prohibit us from going back and doing those audits. Essentially, what they've said is that as long as someone produces their photo ID and their driver's license from another state, they take the vehicle out of state and it's notarized that it's been delivered out of state, and that they have that 90-day permit, then they have met the requirements, and there is no there's no onus on the dealer to investigate anything or to make sure that those documents are true or to make sure that the person doesn't have it registered in the state. It kind of just puts us in a locks us down on any type of audits on those type of exemptions.
Vice Mayor.
So what was the purpose of exempting RV sales from sales tax?
Back in 2004, when Representative Pierce had run this bill, the thinking was that it would be an economic generator that, you know, by getting people to come to Arizona, it's creating jobs, it's creating this mass of putting bringing more money into the economy at the expense of giving up the vehicle licensing tax and the sales tax on the vehicle.
Why didn't they just give up the state sales tax instead of the local sales tax? Well, anybody propose that?
It's actually both in this bill.
No, I understand it's both. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, if they want to give away theirs, we don't give away theirs.
Right.
When we have incentive deals, we don't give away their tax.
And Mayor, Council, one other portion of this bill, and probably the most important part of it, is that it includes a retroactivity clause back to 2004 when this legislation was originally enacted.
No way.
And so that's why we would experience the revenue loss during the fiscal year 2008-2009, because we're currently doing audits from 2004 when this bill was passed, and when we would finish those this year, next year we would start on the 2005 audits. And so that's where that number, the $800 to the $1.2 million, would impact this year. And then going forward, we would be giving up, I think it's $200,000 to $250,000 is what we'd.
So what you're telling me is that we have a state representative who is encouraging dishonesty in people's using the law. That's what it sounds like. And I shouldn't say representative. I should say, you know, everybody here is, if they're voting for it, aren't they saying it's okay to lie to us?
Vice Mayor, Council, we've tried to make the argument that there is some inequity.
I put you in a bad spot there, didn't I? Sorry.
In allowing non-residents to qualify for a benefit that residents of this state don't even qualify for.
And that's what that's the next place that I'm going to, because then why wouldn't you just go get your relative who lives out of state to buy it for you? You buy it back from them, and now, you know, somebody who lives in, say, a place like Oregon that doesn't have any sales tax, and I'm baffled by the whole thing. Thank you.
Before you leave,
I'm curious, has there been a program review? Since this program was supposed to bring in, I guess, RV tourism, if you will, we're supposed to see some benefit from people coming into the state to purchase RVs because it has no sales tax. Has there been any program review to see how many people actually do that as part of the audit? None at all. So it was thrown out there as a bill in the hopes that it was going to bring in sales tax dollars outside of that, and we have no idea if it's bringing anything at all. Well, the good news is we don't have to provide them with any police or fire protection while they're here, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we do. All right, thank you.
And Scott, I don't think it was designed to bring in sales tax through other mechanisms. It was just designed to increase the sales activity of the RV dealers. They're the ones who were benefiting from it. Not that the people who would come here from out of state and buy an RV would spend enough in sales tax on their way back out of the state that they would somehow make good. It was just a pure corporate welfare opportunity that penalizes the residents of this state versus people who live out of state.
I was giving it more benefit of the doubt, I guess.
Yeah, well, I agree with Claude. Every time the government creates a program like this, it encourages people to find every loophole they can and to skate as on thin ice, as much thin ice as they can possibly get away with. So, I mean, it's an invitation to fraud.
Does this affect our relationship on Greenfield Road and the US 60? The RV dealership, isn't there a sales tax rebate coming back to the city on something, some incentive program there?
Yeah, Mayor, I think, I don't know if Mr. Rigby's here, I believe that agreement is not going to be going forward because they've backed off that proposal.
Okay. Okay, what other? We're on slide two already.
Got any more hot buttons?
I hope not. So that's where we are standing. So it's really not moved from that March 20th, so we can kind of go on. Get into some of the expenditure categories. Kind of gave you a definition on slide three of how we categorize the expenditures we're going to go through for you. And if on slide four, we give you some of the estimates of what we're going to do in the 07-08 budget versus the actuals. Again, we're just about right spot on with where we were in March. That's kind of good to know where we were, is where we plan to be, is where we're going to end up, is where it looks like right now. I can answer any questions about this if anybody's got any questions on any of the individual variances. But it's just about where we were in March. Just to give you an idea, we've been talking about on slide five how we've been looking at this on the general fund side for a three-year window. You know, our reductions have been targeted for that 3 years. We're going to be talking a little bit later about a land sale and some issues with the TRVs when Brian presents some issues on his questions. But here's what we're targeting on fund balances for the next 3 years. And what's important for 9-10, that 6.7, that's the fund balance going into 10-11. So that's the period that's supposed to cover. So that's where we've been looking at targeting. We're hoping for the economic upswing to help rebuild those fund balances before we get there.
Vice Mayor.
Does the 6.7 include that component that we were going to talk about, or does it not?
I was going to go right to that. That component is about $3 million. That moves it up 0.7%. So if, depending on the decisions and direction given, it would be about 7.4. Okay?
Remember, that's all being
8 to 10.
So it gets us closer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just going through, this is starting into our 08-09 comparison to 07-08 budget. You should have in your packet of material received this weekend your preliminary budget books and your preliminary CIP books. So you'll have all the detailed books by services as you had it presented last year. So that should be coming out with your material this weekend. So you'll have, before we meet the next time, some time to review those documents and be able to ask any questions, give any direction that you'd have on that. So what we're looking at is about $1,022,000 reduction from 07-08 in the overall, what we call that circle of our all funds budget. So I'll go in through the comparisons on page number 7. General operations and maintenance, we are up 7.2%. But as we'll get into it on services on slide 10, I'll kind of give you the breakdown of where those changes come in, since that's our discretionary spending amount. General fund grants, debt service, capital, and contingency. Those are going to be down that significantly because we have a little bit of less availability fund balance. We're not having any more capital cash projects coming through. And debt service is just about where we planned it, so there should be no change on that. It's about $500,000 difference. Quality of life restricted, that's related to the timing of when we have pool projects that are remaining in that program and just the timing of budgeting those. The transportation restricted, the only reason that's going down is just because the timing of what we call the carryover when we're doing these projects like seal coating, fog sealing, you know, that type of project. So that number will change when we finish our carryover project. It's not that we've cut their budgets at all. It's just timing of when the budget is finally adopted for the full amount. We've had other restricted and or the utilities fund. They're going up $8 million. Lots of various changes in their budgets. The other restricted and trust funds, the biggest thing to point out here is we have $20 million reduction. If you recall, we had the accounting change where we had to really double count internal service funds in the past. I think we're all fairly familiar with that. With the vote that we had for home rule, we put in language to ensure that we didn't have to do that double count anymore. This budget shows that reduction. It was a non-expenditure anyway. So that's where that big significant difference is that accounting change. It doesn't save us a dollar. It didn't cost a dollar before. Now it's just not reflecting that accounting change that we're required by the state to include. Bond expenditures, that's really reflecting the package that we've got in November and the related bond expenditures that would be associated with that. Anybody have any questions on that? This next slide is really just the 0708 general governmental operations and maintenance budget, just put in there for you for have comparison purposes. Graphically on page 9 is the 0809. It'll be $335.3 million, but we've got the breakdowns of where that change occurs on slide number 10. Just going through those quickly. Police, we're seeing an increase of just almost $13 million in that area from 0708 to 0809. Jail billings, the cost of their market survey, cost of their retirement increase, that's all reflected in there.
Scott, Chuck. Just something I'm looking at here on the outside of this wheel with the sales tax,
yes.
About $80 million, and then state shared revenue, $90.5 million.
Yes.
Has the state shared revenue gone up as a percentage over the years?
No, it's what it is we've got less capital. What this ring represents is the portion of the general fund stripped out of debt service, contingency, grants. So this represents your discretionary dollars. And the way that outer ring is calculated is what percentage of those revenue sources go to cover these operational costs. We have had a significant decrease in capital projects funded by the general fund. So that makes the availability for use in these operational funds higher. Okay. So again, it's a reduced commitment to capital cost and out of the revenue streams and just expending them for our operational costs.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, Mayor, Council, just let's put this these pie graphs in perspective, especially as it relates to public safety. The comparison, and Chuck was covering it, is there's approximately a $14.5 million increase in dollars from the 0708 to the 0809 in the public safety area. There's $14.5 million increase. That's about a 7% increase from the year before. But even more significantly, when you took it as a percentage of the total general fund expenditures in the 0708 budget, the public safety, and I define public safety as police, judicial, and fire, represented 67% of all general fund expenditures. And I guess when the question comes about what are the priorities of the city, when you go to 0809, that percentage is now increasing to 70%. So now we're not only are we adding $14.5 million, but of the total general fund dollars available, public safety will represent 70% of all expenditures. I think that's important because I think sometimes when we talk about, and that's even after that, this is in the proposed budget, that includes the reductions in some of the areas that we've talked about already in the proposed budget. It's still represents 70% of the total budget.
So all good, very good points that Chris has made there. So that puts in perspective. So some of the other programs, Parks, Library, and Culture, they're not really seeing any increase in budget. What this is largely due is due to our lease payment related to the Hovicon Stadium. So they have had reductions in those areas, but been offset by our increase in Hovicon Stadium lease payments. Community services, that's really the cuts, or largely the cuts made in planning and building safety. That makes up that difference. And then all the other programs, it's a variance of many little items to add up to all those other programs that are on those cut lists that we provided on the 20th of March. Grants on page 11, grants, debt service, capital. As you can see, Councilman Summers, you see that change in capital commitment that we've had on out of the general fund. That's largely due to the light rail, which was a capital cash revenue pay-as-you-go project. So our commitment on that is significantly reduced, and that's the large difference. Operational grants are largely reflection of the reduced grant availability that is out there and available. Contingency is the reflection of fund balance availability that we've talked about. And debt service, the only reason we have a little bit of decrease, we issued less debt than we were planning on, so that is now figured into our overall savings. Quality of life restricted.
On got a question on the contingency. On
yes,
the,
sir.
On the difference, the $11 million,
mm-hmm.
Does that represent the percentage change from 13 to 11.3?
That is pretty much what it is. The percentage, when we talk about the percentages, that dollar value will change relative to the base amount that's in any given year budget. But that is what that is related to.
Well, what's the total sales tax? Well, let's see. It's not. No, it's the total contingency fund.
Yes. So total contingency, what that is we appropriate each year the fund balance related to this area so that you, if you have emergencies, you can actually tap into those funds. So we don't plan on spending them, as all as you know from looking at our models, but that's what we do. So this represents the amount that we'll be appropriating and making it available in case of emergencies for 07 or 08-09.
But Mayor, I think your concern is legitimate.
There's obviously a reduction in the fund balance going forward, slightly, still maintaining within our, actually exceeding our goals for this year. But remember, a lot of times we have to look at these in a multiple year perspective because either debt service or other issues put pressure on that. But also the percentage gets adjusted, or the amount of contingency to maintain that 8 to 10% is the perspective of what is the general fund budget. As the general fund budget goes from $328.1 million to $335.3 million. It doesn't have to grow. I mean, it's just a smaller, the fund balance is relative to that number, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay, so the 11.3 is of the 300 and some million is how you get to the 42,513.
Right. Well, remember, in 07, 08, we had a 13% fund balance.
Right.
So that's what the
higher, all right.
Higher percentage.
I always having trouble getting to the 11, but I see it now.
That's how it was calculated. You've got a lot of moving parts to get to it,
right.
But that's what that represents.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Vice Mayor.
It's a percentage of whatever that base number is, and as the base number grows, then it affects your percentage, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
But we actually deliberately put more money into contingency knowing that we were having debt service increases. So I just want to make that really clear to everybody. This was planned.
Mm-hmm.
So when they look at it and say, well, you could have spent money, no, that was so that we wouldn't be handing this over to somebody else so that they could hit the wall this year.
And we planned for that for 3 years.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, we took the pain so that we wouldn't hit some sort of wall. And right. I just want to make sure that's really clear. The other thing was, Chuck, use the term lease payments at Hovicon.
Yes.
Did you mean debt service payments?
Well, it's one and the same, but we use the Municipal Development Corporation owns the debt on that stadium.
I see why you're saying that.
And we pay lease payments to the MDC for that, so it's in our operating budget. And why I delineate is because debt service is bond payments, so those are specific. Okay. So that's why I delineate.
It's a good point. It's just that I didn't want us to think that the asset is not in the in our assets.
It
so
is
it is the MDC asset, and that's why
we typically have been calling it debt service. So.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Again, on slide number 12, we've gone through that. That's capital related. Transportation and streets. I think the way you kind of need to look at this, the local street sales tax and highway user, we blend them as one. So really overall, there's really been a net effect of $500,000. And a lot of what their timing is based on when we do the carryover process. These are all restricted funds related to their purposes. So it's related to their revenue streams. So there really is not a lot of change there. Regional Transportation Fund is that Prop 400 monies. And it's just a matter of timing of when you're going to have reimbursed or capital projects related to their reimbursements. Utilities and enterprise on slide number 14. Again, we're just talking about the contingency. Again, that was again planned. We had the 07-08 increase in debt service that was quite significant. We've released those funds. We just have the difference now in carrying, maintaining going forward on contingency. Debt service reflects what their schedules have been, and the operational budgets, the biggest difference there, it's not that it's gone so much down, again, using the EDP or the MDC lease payments, the water farms were paid off in January, so $5.2 million have come out of that commitment, and that's why there's an offset on their operating costs. Actually, we had another good hit was $3.3 million in purchased commodities, which is related to the pass-through, as we've talked in the past. Doesn't change our revenue pictures or expenditure pictures. It's $3.3 million in capacity we didn't have to build in based on forecasted commodity costs. Capital, it's again, a lot of what we're doing now is vehicle replacement program is being paid out of what's the replacement and extension reserve, which is related to debt service. And we've had a little change there. And we are also now, rather than paying cash for electric projects, they are being bonded as we're all going forward with our authorization for bonding on their capital items this next year. Again, bond expenditures on slide number 15.
Did we have
just
a public
related to the new package?
The public art fund, $351,000. I thought we eliminated that. Is that the 2% for the arts and
stuff? That is what that is just paint or spending it off.
We're not collecting it anymore.
No.
If that's what you're asking.
So we still have some money in there that we could sweep?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that we could sweep it.
I think it's been swept.
It's gone.
It's okay. Committed.
Oh, it has been.
Yeah, we're
all right. Because I thought we did that 4 years ago.
We're trying to get.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead. So that's on slide 16 is where the mayor is on that. He's picked up on all the other restricted and trust funds. Again, internal service fund, we've talked about the accounting change. Local transportation assistance is related to capital items that were with LTAP 2 monies, park and ride lots. Mesa Housing Authority is related to their federal funding availability. The cemetery operating is just about flat. Public art fund is being spent off. The only thing you would see is any rebudgets that for capital projects that didn't get done this year. The environmental compliance fund represents that fee increase that we'll be spending next year. And court construction fee, we've been collecting for, I believe, 2 years now. And this will be the first appropriation of those monies for the construction of the court facility. The trusts are just about flat.
How much do we have in that fund now?
I think about $3 million is its total.
Okay. Maybe that you can, on Monday when you do the presentation,
yeah.
We can get that
I'll
number.
Get you that amount.
I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Good.
And the trust funds, which are the public and private or property liability fund, workers' comp, and health insurance, they're all maintaining, as you can see. We've talked about that in past presentations. Mm-hmm. Page 17, just go over the timelines of what we're going to do. Coming up, 19th of May, we'll adopt the utility rate of notice of intention. June 2nd, we'll adopt the tentative budget and introduce the utility rate ordinances. The 5th study session, we'll review the budget for all the new council. Any questions they've got? June 12th, study session, review the bonds, which is the November package. The 23rd, we'll have the council meeting, public hearings, and adopt the fiscal year 07 or 08-09 budget, the 5-year CIP, and the utility rates. And
no. Sorry. Wait a minute. I want to hear this.
We do care.
I just highlighted June 23rd and said, I'm coming back for the public hearings. Go ahead. Yes, Dave.
It's odd that we get a study session to review the budget 3 days after we adopt it.
No, what you do, Council.
Help me understand that.
Councilmember-elect, is you, we set on the 3rd of June, or the 2nd of June, the high point of what you can legally adopt. So after that point on the 23rd, you can only go down from that point. So you're setting your ceiling in that first meeting.
Okay.
After that, you can reduce, you can just not increase.
Vice Mayor.
Okay, so let's make that point again, because if there are incoming council people who want that number to be higher for some reason, they need to give feedback to staff on that. And the other thing, and council members who will be here,
thanks,
Mr. Summers, my question has to do with, are you putting more money in terms of provision for commodity cost increases? We have seen so much volatility in that. And every time I look at this, I think, yeah, we have that contingency. And so you can fluctuate within the contingency. But if there were some reason that you really needed that contingency and it had all gone out in terms of your commodity cost fluctuations, it would be a concern.
That would be a natural concern no matter what, because by state law, you have to have a balanced budget. We make full availability of our resources through appropriating those contingencies. So we'd have a bigger issue than just worrying about paying for contingencies at that point.
If something like that, because it would really be sort of a catastrophic event that would not just impact us, but it would impact everybody. Could the state legislature address that in some way?
They have constitutional law and legislative law, and you'd have to untangle all those issues.
Thank you.
And also, Vice Mayor, just to add, you know, the commodities related to electric purchases and gas purchases are, you know, we pass through those commodity adjustments as we move forward too during the year.
Understood that we pass it through, but it has to be in the budget.
Right.
And so what you could do theoretically is you could account for it by putting it in there as a potential revenue with an offset for cost. I mean, you know, you could look at it and say we can predict based on our previous experience.
And that's exactly what we do, based on utilities' forecast of commodity costs.
Okay.
So we try to do our best on forecasting, and we build that we build that revenue based off of that forecast.
See, 8 years, and I learned something today I didn't know. Thank you.
Dave?
This bond issue and thing that's happening in November, there's talk about the secondary property tax effect. Is that all built into all of this, and the ceiling numbers? And
what's driving that? What you see in here are actually the actual expenditures related to that first year of an anticipated bond program, and it really would only be partial.
Right, we'd have a timing issue of startup,
design,
actual start expenditures, and what we would have to do is a notice of intent to reimburse for those expenditures on anything related to the sales tax, because we won't get any sales tax till the following year.
Right.
I'm so used to not having a property tax, I automatically go to that. But the secondary.
You have to change his vocabulary.
Reprogramming. New word for me, I'm sorry. But secondary tax, we can't collect that until 08-09. The first payment would be, November 1st?
We'll collect it till 9.
And
we'll,
it would be a year, full year?
Full year.
Right.
After, okay.
And Mayor and Council, Brian, Chuck, me, you can answer. Even for next fiscal year, though, just because of the timing of the election, we have very little anticipated capital expenditures related to a proposed bond program in next year's budget, or is that fairly significant?
It's fairly significant with the streets.
Okay, that's right. Okay. But that's just part of the anticipation that would be approved. Without knowing that, we have to budget for it now because we didn't.
You couldn't do
it. Kind of going back to the Vice Mayor's issue, we have to be more conservative in the sense of anticipating the assumption it will pass and build that into our appropriation of expenditures now. And then if we make adjustments, that may affect it or not. If it's not approved, obviously that may affect it or not.
It just sets a higher level, so you can always go down.
But ultimately, you don't, you know, you have to have the authorization from the voters, and ultimately councils have to sell bonds, and we have to approve projects. So there's a multiple level of steps before we ever actually spend the dollars.
Okay.
Thank you.
Questions on page, or slide 19?
Oh, God.
Anything else? Any questions?
You may want to add what's behind.
Okay.
I did attach several of the items for council members elect and council members for related to a comparative of our operating budget to other cities, our bonded debt to other cities, the homeowner survey, which is the average cost per average household, just so you have that for your informational purposes.
Okay. Now, and I like the little tags, the budgeted, estimated, and it makes it easier to jump through there and read them. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
Addition too. Any questions on the presentation?
Okay, we'll go on to the next.
Let's hit the next one. Police salaries and overtime.
Ms. Gary.
That's what's up.
Mayor and Council, I'll have Gary Manning and Chief Gascon come up as well if there's any questions. But let me summarize what the recommendations are in regards to police salaries. At the present, first of all, in your packet, we did include a chart and some additional information that the budget office put together at the request of Council Member Rawls. At the present time, our police salaries are below the market average for all recruit, officer, sergeant, and lieutenant classifications. A 5% increase in July will get us slightly ahead of the market for all of those classifications. And then the COLA that is proposed for January will keep us ahead of the market average. However, that depends on what other cities grant in terms of a COLA, which at this point in time, we don't know what those will be. Anticipating further increases from the neighboring cities as well as those COLAs, we have anticipated and budgeted a second increase, if necessary, anywhere between 2.5% and 5%. Our plan, however, though, is to do another market analysis in late 08 and determine if that second phase of increases is warranted at that time. If it's not warranted, certainly that funding could be used for other needs such as overtime costs. And with the restructuring that the police department has done, currently we're seeing some decreases in overtime costs, but obviously that's a program that we need to continue to monitor closely. I should mention that our compensation philosophy is to be at market average or slightly above. In the case of the police associations, they tend to look at where we rank in comparison to the other cities as well. As was indicated a couple of study sessions ago, cumulative, all of these increases that are proposed, we would certainly be first in the market, and we're not necessarily recommending that that is our target. However, we are anticipating that potentially there will be additional increases, and so we've tried to budget those dollars in anticipation of that. It doesn't imply that those dollars have to be spent. It's just they're budgeted and set aside if necessary or for other public safety needs. And with that, I think all of us are prepared.
Scott has
for
a question, I think.
Actually, I have a comment. You had mentioned that we don't know what other municipal or valley departments are going to do yet. Phoenix was 11% over 2 years.
That's correct.
Is that built into this?
Council Member Summers, every increase that we know to date has been built in. However,
is it in that was built in?
The Phoenix increase has not been built into here because that was published in the newspapers, but we haven't seen that officially yet from council. So what we do have built in here, however, in January we had increases officially from Gilbert, Glendale, Scottsdale. In February, we had Chandler provide increases to police officer recruits and police officer classifications, and in April, Chandler provided increases to police sergeant classes. Those increases have been built into these calculations, but not the Phoenix, although it was reported in the newspaper.
So how quickly could we build that in so we know where, could we get a guess where we're going to be with that? Because I think it's 11% over 2 years.
11.7 over 2 years, yes.
11.7?
Mayor, Council, I think what we're proposing to do is to move forward with where the survey that we conducted. When was it, Gary?
We've conducted a number of surveys over the last couple of months.
Information here is based on
something that we conducted not more than maybe 4 to 5 weeks ago.
So I think the proposal is that we would make the adjustments that are proposed now for the July 1st period, and then do another review in November, December time frame. And that way, because every city is going to continue to look at this, and we thought we would wait till that point in time and then we can look and determine whether or not we need to make another market adjustments, or we also need, we'll need to continue to evaluate whether or not the reductions in overtime have been realized. And, you know, and everything we're seeing now in the chief's program to really manage that better, at least the initial indications are in the charts that it's working, but obviously there could be any large incidents or whatever that could change that. So that's really what the proposal is, just kind of wait until we get to mid-year and then evaluate both those items and then come back to the council and report and then make a decision whether to move forward with additional increases.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
And I'm fine with the recommendation, but my concern is that by doing it this way, we still end up with the Lake Wobegon effect, where all the children are above average. And you can't have that ongoing situation where it's always this, where do you rank? Are you first or second or third? And not end up with this constant spiraling upward. And I still get back to that situation of, are we paying people a fair compensation for what they are doing? So I'm fine with the increases that we're giving, but I guess my challenge to you, Mr. Brady, and it's been an ongoing challenge, is how are you going to address this as a market, as the greater Phoenix marketplace for police and fire and public safety, so we don't have this, you know, the comparison is that you're comparing to everybody else and you always have to be above them. And, you know, everybody wants their kid to be above average. Everybody wants to pay above average. Well, now we're in trouble because we can't all be above average.
I agree. I think it's going to take a regional effort. The market has to come together. There's been more conversations regarding that, at least from the city manager's perspective. But I don't know. The problem is the pressure doesn't always – we're not always dictating what those should be. It comes from a variety of different pressures come from – sources about keeping who wants to have the best and the highest paid, and there's always, and that's why Phoenix is doing their 11%. And so, it's a I think everybody understands the problem, but it's having the strength to kind of say, well, you know, we're going to stick to our salaries and we're going to stick here, and even if we become, you know, 6, 7, or 8, we still think we can be competitive. We can bring in quality officers. We have other attributes of working in the department that would be attractive. But I think everybody understands the dilemma. I don't know that anybody's figured out how to resolve it yet.
Well, it's the difference between genuine market pressures and false market pressures. And I think we have a couple of false market pressures that are involved here. I don't mind the genuine market where what you're doing is you're competing with, you know, whether or not we can actually, and if the market is bigger than the Phoenix metro market, if that's a national market, I'm okay with competing in the national market and paying to do that. I'm also okay, as I said before, I think people ought to be paid just because, you know, a fair salary. Just because you could get them for something less doesn't mean that you should necessarily pay somebody less. You should pay them a fair salary. But I am concerned about it. And, Chief, I'm looking at you, too.
Yes, and there's a couple of things that I think. First of all, Vice Mayor, it is a national market, and I can tell you that the police salaries are increasing everywhere. I'm meeting regularly with police chiefs and from all over the country. It's even an international problem. I can tell you that you know, I work in a group with British police managers. They're having the same problem. I think part of the answer is going to be we're going to have to come up with new business models. Frankly, I'd rather have a very well-paid, smaller police department, but have a business model that allows to deliver very good service in a very efficient way. I think for the foreseeable future, unilaterally, if Mesa tries to lower the market, that ain't going to happen, because the next few years there's going to be a lot of pressure to hire more police officers. I think we are doing a lot of things that will control our expenses, not necessarily by lowering the salary per capita, but by looking at other ways of using our resources. We have lowered significantly our overtime usage, and I believe that absent, as Mr. Brady indicated, a major incident that we cannot plan for, I think that the business model that we put in place for overtime will yield a significant savings. We're averaging about 4,000 hours less overtime per month. And we believe that that will increase We're exploring the possibility of creating other classifications on unsworn personnel that would do some of the work that the sworn personnel do today so that we can dedicate the sworn personnel to do the things that really require somebody to carry a gun. So I think it's going to be, the answers are going to be multidisciplinary. I think that we have to look at the entire scope of options, but I think that it would be a mistake for us to say unilaterally that we're going to hold the line on the salaries and forego the ability to hire the best people that are available in the marketplace today and to keep those that we have. I think we need some time to work. I think we're showing tremendous progress. I mean, we have reduced, for instance, in the time that it's taking us to book and process someone in the jail, we have reduced it by 60% in the last 3 months. We're thinking about these things. That could be equivalent to 5 or 6 police officers in the field. We have reduced our overtime by 4,000 hours. I'm working nationally with a group looking at the affordability of policing, but I think that we don't want to be the leader in cutting down police salaries today.
Which is why, Chief, I said I'm okay with this model that you're looking at. I'm okay with it. I just want us to make sure that we don't maintain this single way of looking at compensation. But it sounds to me like you're looking at cost, you're looking at different models. Yeah. So,
And if I may, Vice Mayor, I think one of the concerns also that we have is to make sure that we are relying upon our compensation philosophy of being at or above the market average. Now, the market average, by design, in all likelihood, is not going to be number one or two in the valley. So we have pressures to look at where are we ranked, and then we've got our compensation philosophy of to be at or above market. Sometimes the two don't necessarily go well together with one another. For example, if we include the 5% increase for police officer recruits in July as we're proposing, that will place us, if you're looking strictly at ranking, at fourth in the valley. But the third place, the city being Chandler, we're only $4 annually below them and only $42 below the second place city of Scottsdale. So if we're looking strictly at ranking, that really doesn't tell the whole story. What we need to look at is what is the market average and run it from there. It looks good. I think it makes good headlines to see what the ranking is, but the ranking does not give us the whole story.
Tom? Daryl just made a good point. He just said we were tied for second if we were that close to rather than calling ourselves fourth, we're tied for second.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I guess I need to understand a little bit about what the policy, what the model is. 5% in July, 3% COLA in January, and how much of the 5% in January is still dependent upon the study, the market study, et cetera? Is it 2.5% that they're going to get, and then we're going to hold the other 2.5% to see what the market looks like, or is it all 5% open and flexible?
It's all flexible, and what was proposed based on where the classifications fall out was 5% for recruit, 5% for officer, 2.5% for sergeant, and nothing for lieutenant.
Right, but that depends upon how it falls out.
Correct.
Okay, but so none of that is committed.
That's correct.
Okay, and the only reason I raised the issue, I think Daryl has another good point he's going to make here in a minute, but the reason I want to make sure there's at least 2.5% of the recruit and officer portion and 1.5% of the sergeant portion in the January time frame that's still flexible is that I want to have the TRVs for another year. I know that you've come up with a model, but half of that model is dependent upon future revenues that we've never had before. I'm opposed to one of those, and I don't know when the false alarm thing is going to go into place and how much it's going to generate, etc. So the second half of the funding for that TRV is pretty speculative at the moment. So I'd like to have, if you took 2.5% of the officers and recruit portion that gets you, and 1.5% of the sergeants, and I'm only talking about the January portion, not mm-hmm. That gives you $527,000, which you can then add to the $500 from the land sale. It's just a backstop. It's mm-hmm. another way of ensuring the continuation of the TRV program. So And the fact that you're withholding the other 2.5% and 1% until you see with the market whether it's required or not, I appreciate. Also hold it as a reserve against the overtime issue. I think that the numbers suggest that we have established a trend with this new model, with this new program, and I would expect that there's going to continue to be not quite perhaps the dramatic difference that we had in March, but you know, I think February represents a good model of about 4,000 hours and stuff. So, you know, I feel a little more comfortable about that now than I did when I first heard this idea. But I like the idea of having that flexibility in January so that Chris can make the decisions and to have that money available as a backup mechanism for funding the second half of the TRV. I don't want any money, though. And again, I'm not going to be here, so nobody has to pay any attention to what follows. But I would prefer that any money that is not put into this package, in other words, if we decide that we don't need to do 5% in January, we only need to do 3, I'd like any money that is not spent on this police officer salary package to remain somewhere in public safety expenditures. I don't want it siphoned off into some other area of the city, because I think, you know, this council has made it statement over and over and over again that public safety is our number one priority, and I think the way we do that is when we have dollars allocated to public safety, we don't do a sweep for something else. I know the police don't like the idea of taking their money and moving it to fire any more than the fire likes having their money taken and moved to police, but you are public safety, you do, and you're important, and that's why I want to say this. So okay, that's my only reservation, and I think with that guideline, I'm happy with what you're proposing here, but just think about that as an alternative source, because I'm concerned about that fire false alarm, any reliability. We don't even know when it's coming forward. According to question number 3, it's coming back later in 2008, so it's not even adopted yet. We don't know. We don't really. And the whole idea of imposing those false alarm fees is to stop people from having them. And so we hope that drops down to zero. We really want that revenue source to be zero. Well, I don't want to fund the TRVs with a revenue source that we hope is zero. So I think that summarizes all my concerns on this.
Well, I just want to ask some questions to make sure I understand this. It seems to me like that when we look at market averages and current pay and we talk about what our ranking is and all that sort of stuff, we only talk about the top end of the pay range. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And I don't necessarily agree with that philosophy at all. I think it should either be the median thing, or maybe what we should do is just increase our pay ranges and then we don't give another adjustment. We'll just increase our ranges and then we'll be number one, right? Because our ranges are very, very narrow ranges. You know, $10,000 for a lieutenant, and the market average is 20,000. So all of a sudden we look bad because our top is below the market top. But our starting salary is $9,000 above the starting salary of all. So I think if I was doing this, and I've come from this numbers background and statistical background, I'd be looking at the median of our range and the median of the market range, and then I'd be figuring this out. I wouldn't be looking at the top range, or I would address the top range issue. I would change the top ranges and change our ranges and then say, now where do we sit? So I have a real philosophical problem with this whole manner that we go about doing this.
And Councilmember Truitt, if you're looking at the beginning of the range, in some of these classifications we're $7,000 above, but bear in mind that's because we don't start them out with the sergeants and lieutenants particularly. We don't start them at the A step. They're started at the E step, so they're started at a higher rate to help us avoid some of the range compression of having similar pay for ranks that are lower. So that's where we start them out, so we have tried to take into consideration the entry of the range, but certainly it's something to consider.
Well, my question is not what the highest person in highest sergeant in the valley gets paid, et cetera. It's what does the average sergeant in the valley get paid? And I don't know how you answer that question, but that's how I would look at how we compare with other agencies, is what the median person gets paid and not what the top of our range is. Or let's just raise the top of our ranges so that there's more upside potential for those classifications, and we compare it. Meeting the marketplace.
I think your point is well taken. It's just that if we were to talk with other cities in the way that they conduct their salary surveys as well, it's always the end of the range. So when we're trying to make apples-to-apples comparisons in terms of ranges, when we're asking for those salaries and ranges, that's what's reported from the other cities as well. That really is the model, for better or for worse. That's the model with the way.
Then I think we should adapt. Collected. I think we should increase the tops of our ranges and meet the marketplace.
If you increase the top of the range, you also have to change the format that you get to the top. It can't be an automatic after 1 or 2 years. So the whole evaluation criteria to get there, otherwise the budget goes through the roof.
Well,
right.
That's because we've got this many steps in our range.
Well, and Councilmember Truitt, I think Gary would acknowledge we've had those internal discussions frequently, because it is frustrating when you look at the start of the range. Sometimes we are way below, and then the other is way ahead. It just doesn't always pan out the way you would envision it. We've had those internal discussions. It has been our practice the way it's been described, but certainly we can continue to evaluate that.
Well, to me, I would prefer to look at the median pay of whatever we pay and the median pay of what everybody else pays, and then let's see where do we stand.
All right. Other questions, comments? All right. I would follow up with some of Tom's suggestions on the that 2.5%, if we can get that other unit funded and have more reliable funding source. I still want to move forward with the fire, but that one is, I thought, well expressed, that if, in fact, there aren't any false alarms and we are successful by this fee, it's not as reliable as...
Mayor, I think what we will do is come back to council in that late November, December, or early December time frame. We will then have a better perspective of whether or not we have other fees that may be available to offset, where we are on the salary surveys and where we are in overtime, and we can come back and make that presentation, decide these funds, we'll just kind of hold them to the side, and then we can decide how those will be reallocated.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah, and let me tell you why I think this is so important to continue funding is, and I think Mike made reference to this a couple of meetings ago, I don't know when cities became the emergency healthcare provider as a government function, but it has occurred. It is deeply embedded in the American psyche, and it's here. But I don't think it's a sustainable nor a wise financial model to have ladder trucks with 4 trained, expensive personnel going out to take care of somebody who has fallen over at a bus stop or whatever. So I think, this is a pilot program, and I think it's important to continue the pilot program so that we get the kind of realistic data that we need in order to make the kinds of evaluations and hopefully creative approaches so that it can be permanently funded. I can look at this and say, if we don't make changes in our model and we just add TRVs, we're talking about a huge increase in the cost of providing this. So we have to take the next year to really think about how we want to permanently fund these. But cutting the program off after 1 year doesn't give us the kind of data and experience that we need in order to make that kind of creative, hopefully philosophical adjustment. So that's why I think it's so important to finish up the second year. I'm not going to be here to do that, but Chief Beck and others are going to have to think hard and long about this issue, because I think it's got to be in some form or another the wave of the future. In my mind.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Response to questions previously raised by council. I have a list in their packet.
Yeah, and Mayor, this is just if council had any. We tried to respond to everything that we've heard. If there's any additional questions or clarifications, this is an opportunity. If not, this is. You have that. You have this.
Transit update is D.
Oh.
Are you questions on follow-up? Yes.
I guess I have one really quickly, Mayor, and that's on question number 2, which is the TRV program, since we had just discussed it before we get too far ahead. On page 3, it talks about the possibility of charging a fee for the TRV response, and I have some concerns over how we might do that. The insurance industry is becoming increasingly difficult to deal with from a transportation perspective. They're at the point now where they're denying a lot of the billing for some advanced life support calls. If it's just an IV and a transportation, it's hard to get them to pay for those calls. Unless we're going to be looking at a model, and I know the chief has looked at a little bit, that includes physician assistant or somebody who can bill, I don't know how we're going to be able to get any cost recovery. Plus, we also have a political perspective of we've been sending that ladder truck that we were referring to pick Mrs. Smith up off the floor. Now we're going to send a TRV to do it and then charge her $50 or $100. How many phone calls are we going to get over, you know, a service that was once free? Now we're charging, and not only are we charging, but her insurance company isn't going to pay. So as far as relying on billing of some kind for a TRV response and getting cost recovery, I don't know that we're going to be able to get there, not without some significant changes in what the state allows us to charge for, what insurance companies are willing to pay for. This problem goes beyond just how the city provides the service, but how we get reimbursed from insurance companies, from Medicare, et cetera. So we may be looking at, I mean, some of that cost recovery is going to be coming out of not sending the $500,000 fire truck to the call, but we're never going to get to the point, not with our current models in the insurance industry, for paying for this system. Okay. So
I think that will be something that will be a challenge as we move forward to identify the efficiencies and if there is a cost recovery. So I don't think there's any clear answers, but you certainly raised some good questions.
I still think it's a good model, and I think it's a lot cheaper, and we will recover with those efficiencies some of that, but right now we're not going to get all the way there.
All right. Any other response or issues on the questions?
Mayor, just to be clear, though, we are going to continue to pursue that option.
Correct.
And there very well may be that we can't get there, but we really think we're on the edge of something that we have to push forward on looking at options.
So I would agree. All right, let's move on to the transit update then.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm here today to give you an update from our initial transit budget that was presented back in February 21st. The reason that I'm here this morning to give you an update is when we presented that initial transit budget, as you know, we identified some significant savings as well as the transit service reductions. We found out on Tuesday of last week that the cost estimates for both dial-a-ride and fixed route were quite a bit higher than the initial projection that we had got in January, to the tune of about $600,000. So, $600,000, yes. So, primarily the reasons for that were the dial-a-ride fleet is entirely diesel. The cost of diesel has impacted that, as well as some increase in some of the vehicle operator labor rates. And some other overhead issues. We had a preliminary meeting yesterday with the RPTA to look into exploring additional options for cost savings and potential additional reductions. We don't have any options prepared for you this morning, but we are meeting with them. We're going to flush out the numbers, and we'll come back and give you an update in the next week or two. So really, this is just a heads up, and we'll be getting back very shortly.
Mayor and Council, this is a very disconcerting update, unfortunately, to be hit with this at such a late time in the process. It really makes it difficult for cities to have make these kind of adjustments at this last minute. But if it is the Council's direction, our intentions are to make up the difference in the shortfall within the transit services. Otherwise, we would have to go and make further cuts in the general fund. But the proposal, at least at this time, is the direction that we're pursuing at this time, is to look at options related to reducing, continue to bring back possible reductions within the transit services, or possibly we have not accounted for any dollars related to the LTAF funds, but I don't want to count on those. So we would have like a plan that says here's what the cuts are within the services, However, if we did get LTAF funds, then we wouldn't have to make those cuts. But we need to have a plan in place now to make up the difference in these shortfalls.
Vice Mayor.
LTAF or LTAF 2?
LTAF 2.
LTAF 2 we're not going to get.
Okay, that's good to know.
I mean, that's what I'm hearing. We're not getting it. I was in a meeting the other day, and the state lottery director was there, and that was the message I heard. And maybe I misheard it, but
just don't count on it.
I wouldn't count on LTAF 2. You know, if you need a motion on this, I'll make a motion for a hearing on June 6th. Tom, you want to second that motion? You know, I just don't think anybody sitting up here is shocked. This is an ongoing problem, and the next council is going to have to look at potentially changing service so that you only have it on the federally mandated. And I know it doesn't give us very much, but it buys you something. But in terms of the costs going up, everybody who has filled up their gas tank knows that the costs are going up.
Okay. Tom?
I was talking to Daryl at one point early in this presentation. I'm sorry. What's the impact for 07-08 budget?
Actually, the impact, we're actually implementing cuts this Saturday, reducing Saturday service from 30 minutes to 60. We're actually be saving $70,000 on that. As far as Dial-A-Ride, we're right on budget. For fixed route, from the last report, we're right on target.
Okay, so we're not anticipating an 07-08 problem.
Mayor Council, now let's go back. When we brought this back to council, this is one of the first presentations, so I'm having a hard time remembering it all. We reduced services by how much total?
1.3 in savings and reductions.
Savings and reductions related both to this fiscal year and the next fiscal year?
No.
1.3 in 08-09, and what was it for your
70,000
for this year?
Okay, so I think that's what you were looking for.
Right. Well, with this new information that came to us since February,
yes,
the $600,000 number you're talking about is going to be an additional problem in 08-09. No part of that is going to, we're not going to have to make any last minute adjustments to get through 07-08. That's what I'm trying to get down to.
Unless you want to cushion the next year.
Right. No, I understand. There's all sorts of other things.
You're right, Councilman. But we're setting the budget, so we're trying to make that change.
But every once in a while, we get news about Dial-A-Ride where we have to do things in the current fiscal year right now in order to make it balance. That's not the case. This is just another gray cloud for 08-09.
So are you ready to second my motion now, Tom?
For June 3rd. Yeah. You know, we don't even have to wait to the 6th. We can do it on the 3rd.
Okay.
The only thing I would suggest is that the council look at those routes that are funded regionally and those routes that are not, and look seriously at route elimination, just shutting some of them down completely. And I know you've got some justice issues on some, but I still think the model has to be, if you want to ride transit, then live on a transit route. And if you don't, we're not providing transit services throughout the city of Mesa. And that 3/4 mile on either side, the federal mandate, is just too expensive to abide by. So those routes that we can eliminate, I think they need to be re-looked at. This cutting it back to 1 hour service, I mean, unless you've got some type of a clock up there saying when the next bus is coming, you're not going to get very much ridership or somebody waiting out there for an hour. If they missed one, they're going to be a sorry state by the time that's up in Arizona. So I would really look at what's sustainable long-term so we can build up a transit community that knows that there's some reliability longer-term. So that'd be my only comment to the new council. What's the good news on transit?
The good news on transit, since we transferred over the rideshare program to Veolia from Mesa Senior Services, we've seen the taxicab program increase up to threefold.
Oh, good.
So we are in the past where we've gotten 400 to 500 uses per month. That's up from anywhere from 12 to 1,500. So it's been very successful transferring that over to Veolia.
All right.
So. Question on that?
Vice Mayor.
Are you still doing the ride reimbursement program as
Absolutely,
well?
Absolutely, and that's been increased as well, because when someone calls in for Dial-A-Ride, the person working for Veolia can also tell them about these other programs. So we're really hitting all three of those programs when they get that initial call.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And is our per mile reimbursement, has that gone up on the ride share program?
I believe it's 40 cents a mile. I don't know if that's gone up in a while. We haven't increased that.
Take a look at taking it up. Okay. I mean, it's still cost effective.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Okay, number three, hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on planning and building safety fees.
Good morning, Mayor, Council.
If I get this close enough this time.
At your meeting last week, we presented to you some proposed fee increases for the planning division. At the council meeting on the 21st, there were some questions about that. We have gone back and looked at those fee proposals and have a memo in your packet this morning that suggests we not increase any of the fees at this time for any single-family residential developments, and that with that, we looking over the last 2 years and the percentage of applications we've had that have been in that category of single-family projects, we project that that's approximately 10 to 12% of the applications we've had in the past. So based on that, we've reduced then the projected revenues by 15% to give a little extra cushion. And so your memo shows then that instead of receiving 191,000 additional revenues from the fee increase, it'd be down to 175,000, almost 176,000 in additional revenues based on the proposed fee increases. Do you have any questions about that modification that we've proposed?
What's the trigger that's going to say, okay, now the economy's changed, let's go ahead and put the fee in? Because I support the fee. I understand the economic downturn, but at some point I don't want to just let this thing slide for another 5 years and then we're in a boom and it busts again and you say, gee, we missed our opportunity. So how are you going to trigger this thing to bring it back?
Mayor, right now the proposal is that we review it next year as we would with all the other fees, and if the economy is coming back, that we would make the
right
adjustments
so
then.
For 1 year, and then we'll take a look. Okay, I support it. Darryl?
Well, I'm going to be the minority here. Mm-hmm. You know, they had given us some support data last time. One of the home builders said, if you impose this, this is how much it's going to cost. It was $25 a house. $25 a house. And I think we're becoming extremely emotional in looking at this stuff to see, are we really making that much of an impact on it? At least the example that was given to us from that builder of a 175 unit subdivision or 275 or whatever it was $25 a house, well beyond their ability to budget, program, et cetera. And I understand there's a philosophical thing going on here, but I think we're reacting emotionally to something that is not a significant issue in the home building industry. It's just a philosophical issue.
Can you elaborate on the 25 a house? Is that on the subdivision thing that was presented?
Mayor and Council, that was an example that we had run through a couple of weeks ago that looked at a development. And in that particular case, the fees, I think it was around 175 lots that was being used on a 49-acre, and it came out to right about $25 per lot.
All right. Vice Mayor.
Wasn't that for this one fee? Didn't he give an example where he had used all of the fee increases that we were talking about that worked out to about $220 per home?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, I think when we get in some of the building safety, it does get up to that level, but on the planning side, it was.
On the planning side, I think it was $25. And what they were. I understand, but what they asked us to do was they asked us to consider all of the fee increases that we were talking about together, as opposed to single-shotting them and saying 25 here, 25 there, and it added up to, I think, about 220 a home. And I agree with you that it's emotional, but I think that the 220 was the issue. If we want to go back and say, yeah, on the planning side, we need to do it, that's fine, but let's look at the whole picture, not just one picture.
I agree with that, but this was all brought up in the context of the planning department's budget, and this $25 a lot is not going to change it. Now, I'm okay with looking at some of these other fees and saying, do we need to do those now or not do those now, but to me, I found it incredible almost that we were here debating $25 a lot.
And once again, what I would say is that the debate was not over the $25. The point that, and it was Craig Ahlstrom who brought the thing forward, his point was, please look at all of the fees. He wasn't talking about just one, but
But it was you start with this one, and then you have the next one that's coming forward, and the next one, and the next one. And I don't know if it had just been 25 in total, I doubt that you would have seen him presenting to us.
But I heard the guy from the home builders that we're opposed to any increase in fees. And my attitude is we're trying to maintain some cost recovery issues. We have some goals here, and I think you have to look at those.
And Daryl, if it's the desire of this council, it's okay if I just direct. Okay. If it's the desire
Whatever
of the council, if it's the desire of the council,
you have permission to do that to me.
I guess I'm not really quite as hot-headed today as I sometimes as some people get me, despite my red hair. I'm fine with moving, you know, that one particular aspect forward, but the request that was made when I got the phone call, the request was, please look at everything together and what you're planning on doing across the board instead of just one fee, and saying, well, this is 25 and that's 10 and that's 100, mm-hmm. is to look at the whole thing. And so they brought this back to look at it in that context. So if you want to make the recommendation that we move forward with this one fee, but not do the others, or, you know, obviously you can choose to make whatever recommendation you want to choose to make. But I wanted us to have that conversation in context of all of the fees, not just one of them.
And that's exactly what we're not doing today. So we're looking at
the planning division $25 lot fee.
Mayor, Council, in terms of any action right now, it is just the planning fee that's in front of you. But Terry Williams is here, and he's provided some materials for you that does look at some of those other fees are, and that's the presentations he's going to give when you're ready about that cumulative effect of the various
fees. Okay, yeah. Where's the building safety fees then? Because I see the 191 to 175 on the planning right. may that, have changed, but this, is that the
sheet has here has oh, all right. a combination, I apologize, and that's
okay.
You know, I guess the question is when someone says all fees, I mean, you know, that's a real difficult for us to sit there and try to imagine every fee that might be impacted. We try to go to those most directly related to the development community. I mean, granted, there are fees in the utilities division, but we've always been those to recover the cost that it actually takes us to change out a meter or whatever it might be, because they're related to price we paid a contractor to do it for us. So, we can go back and look at those, but what it will mean, though, is that the ratepayers in Mesa will be subsidizing growth and the residential component of it. So we weren't sure that was the direction. We were really related. Remember the discussions about planning fees. Remember the planning fees, the planning department, mm-hmm. were trying to achieve a 30% cost recovery. In building safety, the concern there is that is an enterprise fund. So 100% of the revenues go to pay for all the services. And so if we have fewer fees, we have fewer plan reviewers, plan inspectors. But we've tried to come up with at least the sentiment we were hearing is the concern for single-family residential. We tried to say what would it look like if we pulled those out. And frankly, the numbers we see, and I think Terry's talked about this in the past, is really the commercial is really what's carrying the day at this point. Residential is only represented, what was the number you gave me, 11?
15. It's between 15 and 20.
15 and 20%, okay, sorry. So anyway, that's where we are with this presentation, just to give you a sense of not only where Mesa is today, and this is the part I kind of made the point on Monday, is while we appreciate the economic difficulties that some of our partners in the home building business are realizing, we really do believe they don't just build in one community. They're building all over the valley. And part of this is we think that if you look at where we stand in relationship to other communities, we're pretty competitive even with the increases.
All right. Why don't you do the building and safety fees aspect also here for the presentation. I think I'm getting a sense that the council is still of the opinion that that it should pay for itself and we ought to be charging these things through to have a vote on it and put it forward. But why don't you hit the rest of this?
Mayor, Council, I'll go to the fourth. Since you're talking about residential, let's go to the fourth sheet in the large attachment that we've given you. This is for an average size single family, including the subdivision costs. Slide that up so you can get the fourth,
the last one.
The last one of the four. What we tried to do is provide you with a comparison of the other East Valley cities. We've chosen Tempe, Gilbert, Queen Creek, and then also Phoenix to use them as a foil against the East Valley. You'll notice that Chandler is not on here, and the reason Chandler is not on here is because Chandler's numbers dramatically skew the figures. Chandler has made a decision as a council and as a city that they will support development, so their fees are arbitrarily lower than the other valley communities have chosen to do. On the top, you see that the average per lot, again, using a 60-acre parcel, 103 lots in a parcel, one that John put together for us, the valley for community average is $276. We are at right now $321. Civil engineering fees, again, we have a proposal for raising the civil engineering fees, but we're suggesting that we would forego that for residential at this time, as was suggested by some of the council members. What is still ratcheting up in terms of current versus the proposed at the very bottom, you'll see is an increase going forward. We have the built-in ICC chart that we use for the cost of construction. So going forward over the next 12 months, we would see an increase in the building permit fee related to that. Now, for comparison, if you'll go back to your first sheet, which is a large commercial example.
Somebody's got a question.
I'm sorry. There's something that you picked up on, and I think I missed a session somewhere, or maybe I just faded out. Why are we stripping out all the fees from single-family residential? Why are we singling out residential as opposed to commercial and multifamily residential and everything else?
We understood that was the direction from council based on the discussion the other evening, that we were going to forego increases for residential for this next one-year period.
I think it was asked
what the impact would be.
And show an option of doing that that way, not necessarily directing it to do it that way.
That's why we're here today.
Right. Since I didn't have the opportunity, I apologize for not being here, I didn't have the opportunity, I have issue with that. If we're going to adjust these fees, and given what we know about some of these being enterprise funds and what have you, that if they are, we're trying to recover some of the costs or maintain the enterprise fees, then everybody should have to pay as a part of that. And certainly the residential component, these projects create a high demand for service. Both inside your organization, but on a greater scale, public safety wise, probably a higher demand for those services. Now, this isn't recovered here, but I'm just straining my brain to try to figure out when the last time the single the Home Builders Association came forward and say we're okay with a fee increase. So. That said, I'm really concerned about singling out the residential component.
Vice Mayor.
Actually, they have supported our fee increases over the last couple of years. You can get me wound up about a lot of folks not supporting things, but in this instance, they really actually have generally supported it. And the request was, and Scott wasn't at the meeting the other night, the reason he's asking these questions is he had an important family function that he needed to be at, and he was where he needed to be, but he didn't get to hear the conversation. And they are saying, we have supported the increases that you have been bringing forward, and we're asking you not to do this at a time when things are so low. We ask staff to bring it back to us with this option, as you know, and asking what percentage of our fees were coming from residential as opposed to commercial, what impact it had on your funds, and you've come back and you've done exactly what we asked you to do. Now, what the council directs as a result of this information, there was no predetermination of what that direction was going to be, but we did ask you to bring this forward, and you've brought it forward, and I really appreciate getting the information.
Truitt.
So not having 100% recall, I guess, what have we changed? In other words, had we not made these adjustments, what were they? I would like to see that on the same sheet, because it's hard for me to sit there and evaluate not doing it versus doing it and seeing how much, you know, somebody said it was $200 a lot. I doubt that this is $200 a lot that you've reduced this stuff by.
No, it's more than that. It's probably somewhere between $300 and $600 a lot, a home in total. We can provide another column that would show you side by side the impact of either adding in those fees or not adding them in. We can do that and have that for you in your packet for this weekend.
Yeah, and I appreciate, Claudia, what you said. I don't know that I fully agree with the fact that they're in support.
Given the cost of our impact fees in comparison with other communities, and even if we look at this on the bottom of this sheet, we're lower than everybody but one. I think some of the support that we get on the raise of the impact fee is because we didn't raise it as much as maybe we could have or should have or...
These aren't impact fees.
That's a separate issue. I'm sorry. I'm not meaning to confuse them. I'm saying, but the fees that we charge, impact fees and these fees, always tend to be lower than our other communities. In this case, looking at our proposed, is still lower than everyone but Gilbert. Queen Creek, Phoenix.
That's
stripped out.
Yeah, that's stripped out.
So what does it look like with it put in?
Well,
and understand, I'm working Monday, apparently. I was at my daughter's function, so I'm a little bit behind here. So catch me up. What does it look like if we were to put in those fees?
Again, we can put those numbers into this chart and have that for you in for your weekend packet. We can discuss it again on Monday if you want to bring this item back.
That would be good, since I'm a little bit behind here.
It's on the agenda for the planning fees.
Planning fees are.
So why don't we show that? The building safety fees aren't proposed to come till June 2nd. But at least they'll give the council an opportunity to talk about it then. But we will show a column that will show what the proposed increases would be with the planning fees and, well, with all these fees, if they were to go forward as proposed.
My question is, why are the building fees proposed to come forward on June 2nd?
They come with all of the fees. All the fees have been scheduled for that
part
date.
Of the budget.
They've gone to audit finance. They've gone
it's
to...
It's pretty hard to look at it holistically then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we can bring it to the – you can have it in your packets this weekend. We have a follow-up council discussion on the budget next Thursday, and if you want to make a modification, we still have time to make the changes.
Well, the only thing I wanted to explain to Scott is that the only increase you're seeing on this whole chart here is just because they decided that the homes were going to be more expensive and therefore their building permits would be as a percentage of construction costs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no – no rate increases anywhere on this particular chart.
Right.
And that's the reason why we are lower than everybody. If we put our rate increases back in there, I think you'll see that we approach that average or maybe exceed that average.
We write it about the average.
That's correct.
We try to get to the average. That's what we want.
Right. Why don't you bring this back? I think there's several different philosophical issues, and we may get to four.
We're three and a half.
On this, but I think we need a little bit more data, and it's going to be I think we got a little bit of a split vote that's probably going to occur. I want to get to cost recovery. I like the percentages. I don't mind doing it and having maybe a little bit of not full for 1 year, but I still want to do some, and I'm just not sure which category is the right one to put them in. I certainly don't have $25. Doesn't give me heartburn at all, but I still want to look at it holistically, and we're not doing that again is kind of my sense. So that's where I'm at.
And my only last statement would be relative to that cost recovery is if you give us the original proposal, what its cost recovery was, and what this revision proposal is and what its cost recovery is, just so we know that.
Better heads up comparison.
I think we can give that. We've had that in the presentation.
I know it was all there. I just want to see it in one.
We'll bring that back in this package.
So I don't have to go find old packets.
Yeah, we'll put it all together.
Why don't you, if you could, prior to that, why don't you do a couple of sit-down sessions and go through this in more detail outside of the study session agenda so that we can ask questions on numbers and not hit you cold on something else that might be lacking. Vice Mayor.
Mayor, the other thing is that in order, one of the reasons that this one came forward had to do with the positions in John's division. So one of the things that we could do is we could strip out the residential piece and put that on June 2nd with all the other fees. Do the fee that has to do with commercial, address that so that you know you have some certainty in terms of your division things. We could address that on Monday night. And that way you could give it the more holistic look on the residential side of it by putting it on June 2nd. And gosh, oh, I guess I won't be here to talk about it. That's right.
Yeah. You're enjoying that far too much here. Okay, thank you. Do we, can we just delay four? Do we want to go ahead with four on this?
We can, Mayor, if council needs to delay it, we can delay it if you'd like.
What's everybody's time constraint? I know we still have to go back into exec too.
Yeah, so we can come back another time.
I don't think it's going to take long.
Hear it today or? All right.
Give them a few minutes.
Okay, go ahead. A couple minutes.
Ray?
Yeah, maximum 10 right. minutes.
You've got 3 minutes.
Come on, 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
Two minutes.
Yeah.
No pressure. Good morning, Mayor, members of council. My name is Mike Wrench. I'm the director of code compliance. I have a very brief presentation. Basically, the reason I'm here this morning is to seek council approval for the creation of a volunteer nuisance advertising sign program. Basically, currently, code compliance division has primary responsibility for the removal of these nuisance advertising signs throughout the city. We believe that such a volunteer-based program would provide an opportunity for volunteers to assist code compliance in eliminating some of the visual blight associated with these signs. Photographs, real briefly, just kind of show the types of signage that I am referring to as nuisance advertising signs. Everybody's seen them. Wanted to provide council with a few brief sign statistics, just to kind of point to the need for a program like this. In calendar year 2007, code compliance staff removed over 17,500 signs. Between January and March of 2007, 3,700 signs were removed. The same period in 2008, about 4,700 signs were removed. So you can see that the trend is upward, unfortunately, in terms of the appearance of these signs. Code compliance staff expended approximately 600 hours removing signs in fiscal year 2006-07, which represented about $25,000 in direct personnel costs. Basically, staff is recommending the creation of kind of a two-component, two-phase program, the first of which would be a registered neighborhood sign removal program. As the name suggests, Code Compliance would partner with the neighborhood outreach office and to take advantage of some of the active neighborhoods, the registered neighborhoods. These registered neighborhoods would be asked to adopt a particular intersection near their neighborhood. Volunteers would be required to attend a mandatory training session and complete the volunteer application and liability waiver. Very standard forms. If council recalls, several months ago, staff came forward to discuss the creation of a Mesa volunteer code team. This program would be run very much the same way. Participants would agree to separate the sign materials that they collect for recycling and place those components into the blue barrels. The wood stakes from many of the nuisance signs would be used, we're proposing, as perhaps fuel for the kilns over at the Mesa Arts Center. I understand there's currently a program in place that would allow this. Second component of the program would be a special project sign program, not tied to any particular neighborhood. This program would allow individual groups of volunteers the opportunity to participate in single day sign collection or sign sweep events. Volunteers would be provided an abbreviated training session the day of the event. These types of activities would be, of course, supervised by code compliance staff. Participants would also be required to complete the volunteer application as well as the liability waiver, which, again, is standard for all volunteer special projects. And the signs gathered in this component of the program would actually be gathered by code compliance staff and transported to solid waste collection points for, again, recycling. And again, the recommendation that staff would propose would be to implement the registered neighborhood sign removal program in four neighborhoods kind of on a pilot basis, similar to the way we've done this in the past. This would provide an opportunity to kind of evaluate the program and make changes as necessary, and as well implement a special project sign program on a citywide basis, again, providing volunteer groups, large and small, an opportunity to engage in this sort of an activity. Real quickly, in summary, again, we're asking for council approval to implement a new volunteer program to remove nuisance advertising signs from the public right-of-way. We believe that such a program would again, foster a greater volunteer spirit within the city, involve residents in building stronger neighborhoods, and reduce costs associated with removal of these nuisance signs. Any questions?
I'm good. Tom?
Are these things called nuisance signs in the code?
They are referred to as nuisance.
Okay. Signs. I just want to make sure the line that I, my only concern with this, and I make a motion that we proceed with both the pilot program and the special project program, but I want to emphasize that there is to be no contact between volunteers and people putting signs up at any time. Is that correct?
That's correct, Councilmember Rawls.
And if they see somebody putting up signs, they're not going to be authorized, encouraged. In fact, they're going to be specifically prohibited from approaching those people and say, don't put your signs here. What you're doing is illegal.
That's correct. And that will be a huge component of the training that's
going
to be made.
Okay, because that is just disaster waiting to happen. With that in there, strong component, I've made my motion.
Second.
All right, motion second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 I'm in favor, but I did have a comment.
Thank you.
Oh, Jim, go ahead.
Yeah.
One comment.
It's okay. I'll talk to you later. It's just about the training.
Thank you.
Okay, sign up with me. Right. Number four, acknowledging receipts of minutes of boards and committees.
So moved.
All right. Motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Parks. Your reports on meetings and or conferences attended.
Can we do that later?
I think so. All right. Scheduling and meetings and general information, Mr. Brady.
Just quickly, we'll have our council meeting Monday, but we'll obviously have some follow-up study session items for prior to that, so be aware of the time. We'll probably start somewhat earlier, so thank you.
All right. And I have no request to speak, so I would like to go ahead and go back into executive session. And
Mayor, you can adjourn the study session and then reconvene the executive session.
All right.
So moved.
All right. Okay. The motion is to adjourn the study session and reconvene the executive session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes.